Thanks so much for listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look now at Apple, new Apple products and developments. And, you know, it could be a desktop or a laptop computer, a fun gadget like the iPhone or the iPad. There's so many things, so many Apple products, I should say. I think I've got most of them. Well, I think we have most of them in our home. A couple of iPads, iPods, iClouds. Joe Rhodes chuckling with me there. Joe is an independent computer support specialist. He's based in Madison and comes by every so often. Joe, great to have you with us, by the way.
Fantastic to be here.
And you have all those products, too, I assume.
Actually, no.
You don't?
I'm pretty simple. I've got my iPhone. I've got my my laptop. I did get my mom an iPad, finally. Uh-huh. She seems to be liking it. I think she's getting the hang of it. So, but yeah, I haven't really gone. Well, I have an Apple TV. I have to admit to that.
Yeah.
That comes in handy when I just want to watch some stuff on the TV and not sit in front of my computer.
Yeah, well, You do spend a lot of time with all those products, though.
I spend a fair amount of time helping people with all of those. So,
well, the MacBook Pro, the Mac Mini, the new iMacs, they're going without the optical CD drives entirely.
Yes. And I think Apple's going to – I think we're going to see this go through their entire product line. They're just going to give up on the optical drive.
Yeah.
Steve Jobs kind of said, you know, hey, these things are vestigial. They're just not that useful anymore. And we have these things, and we're building them into products, and we're taking up precious space, and we can make things smaller and lighter, and we can make more room for batteries and other stuff if we get rid of them. And that's what they did when they introduced the new MacBook Pros. They got, what is it, a third smaller and thinner mm-hmm. than the previous MacBook Pro, and they have longer battery lives, and a better screen, and a better this, that, and the other thing. And basically, it's because they all that space that used to be there for the optical drive, they gave it up and put other stuff there. The world is moving towards everything being online. We're getting our software through either the Mac App Store or we're downloading it directly from the software vendors. It's really not, you know, we just don't use those optical drives that much anymore the way we used to. And even when we're sharing files amongst friends, we're either putting it up on iCloud or Dropbox or something like that. Or we have these little USB flash drives, which are way faster and way bigger than a CD-ROM or a DVD. So the use case for these optical drives is really kind of fallen by the wayside. And I think we're going to see it go the same way we saw floppy disks. You can still buy an external floppy disk drive and plug it into a USB port if you really need it. And there are five people out there that probably still do. And it's that same way with CDs. You can still buy external CD readers that you plug into a USB drive, and they work great. So if you do have an entire library of data on CDs, you can still get to them.
We had an email from Bob in Wausau. Says he, this may go along with what we've just been talking about. He says, I have a late 2007 iMac OS 10.4.11 Tiger. I'm looking to back up my 81 gigabyte iPhoto library on an external hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
Want to be sure to keep all of my events and keywords intact and still be able to use the revert to original feature in iPhoto when I open the backup files. I'm not on a cloud service. Are you aware of a software product called iPhoto Library Manager? Read about it, wondered if it's the way to go or if you have other ideas.
I have certainly heard about iPhoto Library Manager, and I think I even used it briefly because I had a couple of iPhoto libraries. Apple baked some of this support into iPhoto at some point, and I don't remember exactly where they did this. But what you can do, at least with newer versions of iPhoto, is you can take your entire iPhoto library, it's in your pictures folder, and just drag that whole iPhoto library off to an external hard drive. That'll make a copy.
Okay.
And with newer versions of iPhoto, if you hold down the Option key while you launch iPhoto, you will get different options you can do with iPhoto. And one of those will be, which library would you like to open? You can then point it at the one that's sitting on your external hard drive. Open it up. You should see absolutely everything, your events, your keywords, all of that should copy over. And when you're happy that everything is there, and if you're looking to, say, create some extra space on your original hard drive, you can then delete the original hard drive after delete the photo library off the original hard drive after you've confirmed that it's on the new one. But if you're just looking at making a backup of that photo library just to keep that a second copy around, You can either manually drag that iPhoto library over to an external drive every so often, or you could choose a program like, say, Carbon Copy Cloner is a pretty good one,
yeah.
Which will, you can say, okay, I'd like to mirror this folder with this other folder. So you just have it mirror your photos, your pictures folder from your built-in hard drive onto your external, and then it'll just keep synchronizing the changes so it doesn't have to copy the whole thing every time.
Oh, so, that's great.
Yeah, but you know, honestly, I'd look at not just backing up your photos, I'd look at backing up the whole Mac, because external hard drives are cheap and they're big and they're fast, and you probably have a lot more than just photos that you want to hold on to. You've got email, you've got bookmarks, you've got contacts, you've got that bizarre soup recipe that you saved in a folder somewhere that someday you're going to want. And there's so much stuff on our computers nowadays that backing them up is just really, really important.
It just makes sense.
And yep. It's just not that expensive, but it's so expensive if it fails and you haven't.
Yeah.
Either emotionally or sometimes even monetarily. It's always hard to tell someone they lost their data.
Do you have to do that very often?
Thankfully, no. One of the things I do professionally is I set up backup systems for businesses, and they tend to work pretty well. So,
and if you got a backup system, you can, almost don't have to pay attention.
Well, the best, my favorite quote is, the hallmark of a good system administrator is laziness. So I try to set these up so they're completely automated, so neither I nor anyone else has to do anything with them, until it comes time to, oh, we deleted that folder. And I can say, oh, no problem. I can get that back.
Dave in Park Falls, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Hey, I've got a question about an iPad. I have the latest version. I think is it an iPad 4? Oh, they didn't put a number on them.
Yeah, they just called it the new iPad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have a MacBook Pro, and I've got a Apple, I forget what it's called, Airport Extreme, I think it's what it's called. That's my wireless router.
Okay.
And the MacBook Pro loads websites very quickly.
Okay.
The iPad does not. And some websites, I'll have to, you push the little button for the reload thing.
Yeah.
May have to do that a half a dozen times, and it'll time out. And I'm wondering, since they're both Apple products, and one is clearly working just fine and the other isn't, if there's a setting I've goofed up or...
Well, there's generally speaking not much to do with settings as far as the Wi-Fi goes. How close are these things to the Airport Extreme?
10 feet.
Okay, so it's not a distance thing. The other possibility, are you in a Wi-Fi busy area? Do you have neighbors that have a lot of stuff?
I'm on a lake in the Shawamiga National Forest.
Okay, well, that shoots out that theory.
Yeah.
I don't know. You stumped me right off the bat.
I can't think of anything either.
Yeah, I mean, if it was... I know, for example, the new iPads do support 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi. I was going to say, the older ones, they only supported the 2.4 gigahertz band, and maybe there was something interfering with that. But I'm fairly certain the newest iPads do support that 5 gigahertz. The laptops definitely do. So my first thought is, well, maybe they're using different frequencies, and there's interference on one and not on the other. But that shouldn't be the case.
Is it possible you could, and I don't even know how to do this, to tell you the truth, change the channel, the broadcast channel of the airport?
Absolutely. On your, either on your iPad or on your MacBook Pro, I'd suggest the MacBook Pro just because you can plug it into the Ethernet. Open up Airport Utility, and under the wireless options, that's usually set to automatic, which means it'll scan the area and just see if there's, if anyone's busy on one channel or not. You can absolutely go and manually set it to a different channel.
Oh, okay.
And there's also little apps you can download for your laptop that will check and see what else is on any particular channel within range.
Okay.
But yeah, if you've got a fairly recent MacBook Pro, I've experienced this myself. These MacBook Pros, they have fantastic Wi-Fi antennas. I mean, really, really good antennas. And they're better than, for example, the one on my iPhone and a lot of other laptops. So I've been at client sites where I said, oh, the Wi-Fi signal is great here. And they got their PC laptop out and they couldn't even reach it. And it's just because the antennas are that much better on the laptop. 10 feet away, that shouldn't be a problem.
Now, this airport is in a cabinet. It's in a wooden cabinet. Would that make a difference?
Wood shouldn't cut the signal down too much, but it certainly wouldn't hurt just as an experiment to take the thing out.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it'd be worth a try anyway.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'll change a channel and maybe try it out of the cabinet first.
Yeah, and if it's sitting on, I don't know if the shelves that it's sitting on are metal. Metal obviously is really reflects radio waves very well.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's sitting on something metal, or there's a fairly good size, like a stereo cabinet right next to it or something like that, that would be creating some interference, it might not hurt just to try moving the airport base station.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Joe Rhodes, independent computer support specialist based in Madison, our guest as we talk with him about Macintosh products. Great to have him along. The new Fusion, there are some new Fusion drives out there that are, they've got sort of the solid state and more traditional model.
Yeah. This is something Apple has been introducing here with their newer Macs. But solid state drives are fantastic. They're really, really fast. And it's just night and day difference when you put one of these in a computer. The problem is they're kind of expensive and they're not real big yet. And if you've got, say, like the first guy that emailed us with an 80 gigabyte iPhoto library, that's going to get to take up a lot of space on a solid state drive, and it gets expensive to get one that's big enough. So what Apple did is they said, well, let's bundle a smaller solid state drive, and we'll bundle it with a larger traditional slower hard drive. And then what we'll do is we'll automatically move data between those two so the user gets the best possible experience. And it's kind of like, think of having a small bucket sitting on top of a bigger bucket. When the small bucket overfills, it just falls into the bigger bucket.
Yeah, that's cool.
And it's kind of what Apple did. And it's really neat. It's seamless from the user's experience. You don't even notice it. And I've been reading some reviews about how it works technically, and they did some really clever tricks to make sure that the stuff that you're doing is always as fast as possible. And then they kind of automatically and in the background will shuffle things around so that you're always getting the best experience, but you still have all this space.
Very cool. Well, we've got lots to talk about with Joe. I noticed the earnings report on Apple are down a little bit again, so that's something I want to talk about.
Yeah.
But certainly we want to answer your questions as well. And we'll be back with Joe right after we take a look at the news. Please stay with us. Well, they say that the two things you count on are death and taxes, but a third item I think might be that Apple will come out with a tempting new innovation pretty regularly. That's another thing that you can almost count on. Larry Mueller here talking today with Joe Rhodes. He takes us through the Mac universe. He's an independent computer support specialist. Always great to have you with us, Joe. Thanks so much.
This show is one of my favorite things. I love it.
Well, I tell you what, we have lots of callers. The number, if you have a question about your Mac or about some of the software or whatever, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can post on my Facebook page as well at the Larry Mueller Show. Love to have you do that. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. Terry in Green Bay has been waiting a while, so I want to go to him. Terry, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got an iPad 2 that I'm running iOS 6.01 on. And I have a Netgear dual-band router, and it seems I'm getting dropped every 30 minutes with this setup, and I'm not having the same problem with my laptop, but my wife is having the same problem with her iPhone 5 when she tries to run it here.
Okay.
Are you aware of the issues between Apple and Netgear?
Well, I don't know specifically if there's issues about Apple and Netgear specifically. The iPad 2, and I'm going from memory here, but I'm pretty sure the iPad 2 did not support the 5 gigahertz networking, and that the iPhone 5 does. And depending upon exactly which laptop you use, it almost certainly does. Certainly the more recent Apple ones do. So it might be that some devices are connecting on a frequency that has less interference and some that are connecting on one that has more interference. The older Wi-Fi connection, the 2.4 gigahertz, that is a very busy frequency. Everything from cell phones to Wi-Fi networks to security systems, there's just a ton of stuff that broadcasts on that traffic because it's been unregulated. It was left open for that purpose. So there's all kinds of things that could be jumping in the way. And we were kind of talking about this earlier with the gentleman who had an iPad that was having connection issues. One thing you might want to do is maybe go into the Netgear router and try changing the channel. Now, this can be kind of a hit or miss kind of thing. And there's apps you can load, at least certainly on the Mac, and I'm sure there are for the PC, where you can see it's kind of a survey tool where you look and see what's going on in the wireless spectrum around me. And maybe you have a neighbor that is using a similar frequency. I was reading about a guy who was tootling along just fine until just after Christmas, and then all of a sudden everything just fell apart and he couldn't figure it out. And all of a sudden it dawned on him, oh, I bet the neighbors got Wi-Fi gadgets for Christmas, and they turned them all on, and all of a sudden it's affecting my Wi-Fi network. So you might want to try a Wi-Fi scanning tool, sometimes called a survey tool, and just see what's in your area, and then look for a channel that's not too busy. Now, Wi-Fi, especially on the 2.4 gigahertz range, the channels go from 1 to 11 in the United States. So if someone's using channel 6, you can't just hop onto channel 7 because that's pretty close. You usually want to aim for about 3 away from what someone else is using. That's ideal. So say if somebody's using channel 6 and there's a lot of people on channel 6, if you can, switch up to channel 9. That will get you away from a lot of that. So it's really kind of a trial and error thing.
Hmm.
And there are some things that won't even show up on a scanner that will cause problems, such as maybe someone's cellular wireless phone or cordless phone. Those broadcast on the 2.4 gigahertz. I've seen microwaves do it. I've seen all kinds of random things that all of a sudden, and they only pop on once every so often, but it's just often enough to drop your wireless connection. And then when they turn off, everything goes back to normal.
Hmm.
Wireless can be a little maddening to figure out.
So I'm finding out.
Thanks. Good luck, Terry. Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Mike in Hudson. Hi. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Larry and Joe. I've got a MacBook unibody.
Okay.
And I think it's from 2008.
All right.
And I've got a problem with the optical drive. The CD went in and will not come out.
Yeah.
And it's reading it fine, and when I do the eject, it, you know, makes all the
makes a noise, and then sucks
like
it back
something's
in.
Moving.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I actually got kind of desperate and I bought a new optical drive, put that in, and that ate the disk too, and it won't come out.
Yeah. More than likely what's happened is it's not lining up properly with that very finely machined slot that's in the body itself.
Okay.
And I've run into this with my own laptop at one point. To get the drive, the disk out of there, while you're ejecting it, if you get something very thin and with enough, I use a very fine screwdriver or something like that, if you can kind of guide the drive up or down a little bit and figure out where it's not lining up. A more permanent fix then is to take the thing apart and see how you can adjust that drive in there so that the opening lines up with the slot in the unibody.
Okay.
That's basically what's happening, is it's getting caught on the chassis itself. And for some reason, that drive is just not quite properly lined up with where that slot is.
Okay, and there is kind of a rubber slot inside there that the disk is supposed to go through.
Yeah.
Would it help to just cut that, you know, use an X-Acto knife and just cut that off or something? Or
I think if you take the drive out of it, you can actually, from the inside, I think you can actually remove that. It's probably glued on there.
Okay.
So if you're very careful, you can take that off just in case you decide you want to use it later.
Yep.
But
okay.
It's almost certainly not lined up with that slot, especially if you've already had a second drive in there. It's doing the same thing. It's an alignment issue. And take a look, like if you've changed anything else in the laptop, like if you've added a new hard drive. Sometimes the hard drives are a touch thicker than the original one. And I've seen that with a Mac Mini, actually. I've seen that cause a problem.
All right.
Okay. With the bigger hard drive was just pushing just enough on the CD-ROM drive so it wouldn't line up. It's very frustrating.
Okay. All right, I will take a look at that.
Thanks, Mike.
Yep, thank you.
You know, there's a Java security issue, and I think it was worth bringing up. And Gail emailed us and said, you know, Homeland Security
yes.
has advised computer users to disable Java. This is easy enough to do in Safari, but it also eliminates many sites that Gail likes and wonders what you can do to maintain security and still use sites that use Java. And maybe to begin with, why is the Homeland Security doing this?
There's a flaw found. Java is this programming language that Sun Microsystems developed, and now Oracle owns it. And it's fairly well used on the server side, not that common on the desktop side of things. But basically, they found a flaw that if executed, could give the remote person full access to your computer. And what's worse is they actually found this flaw out in the wild, which means it's being exploited right now.
Mm.
So if you went to the wrong web page, Mac or PC, and you had Java enabled, you could get your PC taken over. And the problem is they do it surreptitiously, so you don't notice it. but they might be checking your bank passwords when you type it in. They might be using your computer to attack something else. I mean, there's all kinds of things they can do. So you really don't want to get hit with this. Now, Oracle has issued a couple of Java updates that are supposed to help mitigate the problem, but unfortunately, they don't actually fix the problem. The problem is still there. Last I read, this may have changed over the last couple of days. So the solution at the moment is to disable Java. Now, I should point out there is a big difference between Java and JavaScript. They're two different technologies with unfortunately similar names.
Yeah.
So you are completely okay to leave JavaScript on. Most 90% of what you see on the web is JavaScript, where you have all these neat little animations and things like that. Very, very little web pages these days actually use Java. Exceedingly few. And so, really, you can turn it off and you probably won't notice. So there's a checkbox for Java and there's a checkbox for JavaScript. JavaScript is fine. It's Java that has the problem. Interestingly enough, Apple, they have a software update mechanism that runs in the background that is always being updated about malicious things that might be working their way towards the Mac. And this came out, I think, in macOS 10.7. Might even have been macOS 10.6. I'm not sure. Anyways, as part of this update that happens behind the scenes automatically every day, they disabled the Java plugin on OS X. So Mac users who are using a fairly up-to-date version of Mac OS X have already had their Java plugin disabled by Apple because they know that this thing has got a major security. I mean, when the Department of Homeland Security, they don't just say disable it. They say you should uninstall Java. That's pretty strong language. I mean, they've never said that before. So this must be a pretty big deal. And that's why I think Apple took this step of basically they unchecked that checkbox for you. You can still go in there and manually turn it back on, but they through their threat mitigation system, they've already put it out there that they've disabled it for most of the more modern Mac OS X users. But it's still good
so
to keep
everybody
an eye
else.
On that. Honestly, so few people actually need Java. It's just not. It's used on very, very few websites. And for those people that do, they'll know they need it. Okay, so you go in, you turn it on, you use your website, you go back and turn it off. Oh. That's really the best way to do it at this point in time until Oracle can get a good, proper fix out there.
Peter in Racine, thank you for calling. Hello.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Great show. See, I'm trying to find out if there's an app for the iPhone while I'm out on the road that I can control a TV as far as somebody else that's watching it that may be handicapped or unavailable to change channels and be able to change those channels with my iPhone so that they can see the proper program.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. My wife often will say, "Oh, I forgot to record that show," and she'll do that with her iPhone.
Yeah, I was gonna say I've certainly heard of that for DVR type devices and like the TiVo type things, but they absolutely have remote controls for iPhones for using things like Apple TV, but I don't know of anybody who creates a remote control that'll remote control a television that you're not anywhere close to. Because you want to basically be able to do this, like if you're at work and you get a phone call, "Help, I'd like to watch Looney Tunes or Mickey Mouse Clubhouse or whatever it is," you can go and change the channel for them. I just don't know. I've never heard anything about it. I absolutely see the use case.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, it was worth a try because I've searched around and I keep striking out. So I thought maybe
stay listening, Peter, because as
we have a brilliant
often
audience here.
Happens, yeah. People call in or they'll post on the Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show an answer to that. So stay listening.
Yeah.
Okay. One other quick question with regards to that Java problem.
Yeah.
Can you just roll it back to the earlier version of Java? Because I was reading someplace that it's safe to do that. If you go back to the 6.38 version or something like that, and I can take the answer off the air.
Yeah, supposedly the Java, the flaw is in Java 7, and the Java 6 platform does not have that flaw. The problem is there's other flaws in Java 6.
Oh.
So you're kind of doomed one way or the other, because if you go back to an earlier version of Java 6, you're opening yourself to other flaws that have been out in the wild for so long that people are exposing them. Or do you stay with Java 7 and use a flaw that's now a new flaw that's being actively exploited? You're kind of stuck between that proverbial rock and the hard place.
Yeah.
At the moment, I would say only leave Java on if you absolutely need it. And like I said, there's only a handful of sites that actually use it anymore. It's much more common on the server side of things where they're creating these web pages and giving them to you, but rarely now do they actually ask you to run it.
And a Facebook question from Susan, who is a new Mac user, wondering what, if any, antivirus software should she use that won't bog and slow down her computer?
You know, at the moment, my stance is still that I don't believe we need any virus software on the Mac. And I'm not saying that Macs are impervious to viruses, but there are, A, just very, very few out there. And the ones that are out there, Apple has taken some pretty strong steps to keep that from being as much of a problem. More often than not, you don't get an actual virus on a Mac, but you get a Trojan, which is basically a piece of software that's parading around as something good, and it's really kind of nefarious. And so you double-click the installer to start using it. Apple has a system in place where before it will install, the installer will check with Apple and say, is this on a list of known bad software? And if so, a big box will come up and say, this is not what you think it is. You should not install it. So they kind of keep you from falling prey to that thing right off the bat. And now with Mac OS 10.7.5 and now the Mac 10.8, they have a system called Gatekeeper, which basically will not allow programs to run that are not either signed by Apple, so they have a known identified person who wrote it, or you have specifically allowed it. So if you just download a new piece of software from somewhere and it isn't signed, by default, it will not run, which keeps you from – obviously, if you're writing a virus, you don't want to sign your name to it.
No.
So the idea is that software that is signed is going to be more reliable than software that is not. And the default settings on Mac OS 10.7 and 10.8 now are to prevent unsigned software from running. You can override it if you want. And I do because I have software sometimes. I know where it came from. I trust the folks, so I'm willing to run it. But by default, it won't let you just kind of accidentally download something and run it. And then before you know it, you have a virus. So there's several steps that Apple has taken to make getting a virus much, much harder. I'm not saying it's impervious, but at this point, I just haven't seen a reason to do it. Having said that, if you really need an antivirus, maybe it's a corporate regulation. There's a good one by Intego that I've used in the past. And it has – one of the things it does quite nicely is it cleans up viruses that are attached to Microsoft Word files. They don't do anything on a Mac, but you can pass it along to a PC person and they could get it. Or the mail system will kick it back and see that virus. The Intego product has done a good job of cleaning those up. So you still have your Word document. You just get rid of the virus that's attached. So that'd be a pretty good option if you need one.
Sandra in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about Safari, which I think has lost its mind. For reasons that I can't explain, if I want to download a PDF, mm-hmm. I get a blank file.
Oh, how fun.
Yes, huh. I thought so.
So Safari, by its default setting, when you click on a link that is a PDF, it will open it and display it directly in Safari. Is it
right.
doing that?
Yes.
Okay. If you right-click on that PDF that you're looking at in Safari, there's an option that will say Open in Preview.
Oh, okay.
And then it'll open in the preview application where you can choose to save it. The other thing you can do, rather than clicking on the link that will then open it up and show you the PDF directly, if you right-click on that link, you can say Save Linked File As. Or I can't remember exactly mm-hmm. what the verbiage is. But basically, instead of asking Safari to open it up in a window and show it to you, you're saying, just download it. And it'll download it somewhere. So those are a couple of options that might get to what you're going at. The one thing that can kind of throw this system afoul is if you have downloaded and installed Adobe's Acrobat Reader. Which is really not entirely necessary on Mac OS X, because at Mac OS X has got PDF capabilities baked right in at the mm-hmm. very basic level. But sometimes there's a few things it doesn't do that you need Acrobat Reader, and one of the things it will do is it will install the Acrobat Reader plugin, which takes over, and then it displays it in Acrobat Reader instead of the built-in. So I suspect what you're running into is the Adobe Acrobat Reader plugin is doing things in a different way. Now, how do you diagnose that? That's a little trickier. But I bet if you Google search for it, I'm sure I could figure it out if I was looking at it. But if you Google search, you can probably find a way of uninstalling the Acrobat Reader plugin from Safari.
Okay.
And it won't be that hard. You just have to get to the right folder. Might just take a little more time than we have on the air to get there. But I'm sure you could uninstall. And if you uninstall the Acrobat plugin, it will then default back to Apple's built-in PDF viewer and plugin and methodology of handling those.
I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
And I'm going to definitely try it.
Okay. Give it a shot, Sandra.
Good
Thank
luck.
You very much.
Yep. Thanks very much for calling. Another happy, satisfied customer, Joe. Let's go to Ron in Grand Marais.
Hi, thank you. I'm actually down by Traverse City here in the winter, but 8 months out of the year, I'm up in the woods at Grand Marais, and I'm about 4 miles from a tower.
Okay.
I just purchased in December an iPhone 4S, and I'm a totally blind individual, so I wanted to have something that I could use the voice over system as best.
Sure.
I use Siri a lot. I wondered, first of all, is there anything better or modification to get Siri to do more things by voice? But secondly, I'm about 4 miles from a tower 8 months out of the year, and I want to be able to load the Wisconsin Public Radio app, which I haven't figured out how to do yet, but I've been hearing it advertised.
Mm-hmm.
And is there any way to boost the signal? A friend of mine had his iPhone up there this past summer, but it kept cutting in and out.
Sure.
Yeah. That's it.
Okay.
Well, the first part with Siri, I don't know how you can extend Siri's functionality. There are some third-party products that you can install that will do certain things. I don't know how good they are. Siri has the advantage of Siri is baked right into the phone, so she gets access to stuff that other people don't. And I know Apple is busy adding features to it. There's some features I would love to see come along here, but it's not quite there yet. But I don't know exactly how you extend it. I would probably be on the lookout for maybe some additional third-party apps that replicate what Siri does, but maybe are more tuned to your situation and more geared for exactly what you're trying to do.
Okay.
With the iPhone and the signal, I guess it depends on where you are. I mean, 4 miles from a tower is a hike, but it's not crazy. The question, though, is, are you getting signal that is a 3G signal, or are you getting the older style edge signal? Because I've noticed, and I'm an AT&T customer, once I get away from the metropolitan areas, I go back to an older cellular technology that is much, much slower. And the voice is fine. I can call fine, but if I try and load a web page, it just takes forever. There are some things you can do, though, that help with this. If you have a good internet connection at your location. So if you have a broadband internet connection, however that might come across, AT&T, and I would imagine Verizon, some others, will sell you a mini cellular tower where you basically run the cellular bit over your internet connection, and it creates a small tower right in your home.
There you go.
Called microcells.
Very cool. We had a listener suggest, you know, that remote control, operating it from away from home. A listener said, go to ITV. EYE TV tuners.
I've heard of that company only because they were out first, and it made Apple rename. They wanted to call it the ITV, but they couldn't because the name was taken. So they called it the Apple TV instead. I remember that. That's very good advice.
Cool. Thanks, Joe. Joe Rhodes, independent computers and board specialist. He'll be back, and we'll visit with him again. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.